seriously are.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided to us in order to broadcast to all of you on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. And boy, they're still taking their victory laps here in New York City. Comrade Bill de Blasio, who overwhelmed his opposition, crushed them across the Hudson River, where Murphy crushed Quintano, the lieutenant governor, and then down in Virginia, which was thought to be a very close race. In fact, followed intently by Mark Levin, who follows us since his bunker is located in Virginia from 6 to 9. But Northrum crushed Gillespie. And as a result, the Democrats couldn't be more fatuts. You would have thought that they had just won the presidential election or the midterm elections. On the line to discuss that is Jeffrey Lord, the former CNN political commentator who used to be at it with Anderson Cooper every night until all of a sudden CNN realized, hey, he's getting the best of Anderson Cooper. We can't have that happen to our iconic marquee figure. And then they dropped him like a bad habit, but he has refused to drop us from his Rolodex of shows that he does on a regular basis. Thanks for joining us again, Jeff.
Hello there, Curtis. How are we?
I'm going to ask you, because if I listen to the Democrats, they say you better crawl into the bunker that Mark Levin has for his broadcast in Virginia, because they're coming at you for the midterm elections after three crushing losses yesterday suffered by Republicans.
There's a reason my friend Mark is in that bunker in Virginia, and it's because he is in Virginia.
Listen,
news bulletin, Democrats carried two blue states again. I don't see the news here. Donald Trump didn't carry them. They elected Chris Christie, and I think I've seen stories that Chris Christie is at this moment the most unpopular governor in America. And they've elected another Democrat as governor of Virginia. I mean, they elected Terry McAuliffe 4 years ago, and then Donald Trump was elected president. So I just, you know, if they're depending on New Jersey and Virginia to defeat Donald Trump, they already had it and they didn't get anywhere.
Well, you're a good person to get a litmus test on the New Jersey gubernatorial results, because Jeffrey Lord, you are a resident of the Keystone State in Harrisburg. You've taken that highway many times right through Easton, across the river into New Jersey.
Yeah.
And Phil Murphy crushed Guadagno, the lieutenant governor. But you're saying it's not an anti-Trump vote. In fact, it's an anti-Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie vote?
Yeah, I think it was part Chris Christie. And I think New Jersey's a blue state for the most part. So I just don't see, I mean, good Lord, they've elected Bob Menendez, for heaven's sakes, who has all kinds of problems, as we know. I mean, this is like the news discovery that there are polar bears in the North Pole. Interesting, but the news value is not particularly shocking.
Wait, Jeffrey, I've looked at the various PSAs that have aired. I see those polar bears sinking on those ice floes there up in the North Pole because of climate change.
Here on the Susquehanna River just the other day. God, yes. It was just dreadful.
Yes. Well, anyway, in reference to the race in Virginia, which was expected to be neck and neck, here's Ralph Northrum giving his victory presentation, firing shots across the bow of Team Trump.
Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness, that we will not condone hatred and bigotry, and to end the politics that have torn this country apart.
And then he went on and on and on, Jeffrey.
Well, let me just tell you, Curtis, I wrote a column about this. I mean, that campaign, that particular ad of a Gillespie so-called voter with a Confederate flag, which, by the way, is the military banner of the Democratic Party of the day, chasing minority kids. I mean, that ad was flat-out racist. That didn't come from the Gillespie campaign. That came from this independent group who apparently did have some ties to Northam. So I really do think he's got to look in the mirror here. His party has a serious, serious problem with race. And for the sake of the rest of the country, they need to get over it.
All right, but the president had gone golfing in Virginia at his golf links on 15 separate occasions. Gillespie, the Republican nominee, never invited the president to join him at any of his political...
I think that was a mistake, yeah.
And then,
I know Ed Gillespie. I've known him since we were both, as they say, pups running around Washington, D.C. He's a terrific guy. He's a great guy. I do think that that was a mistake. And it's my understanding that the people he hired in the beginning, you know, consultants and all that sort of stuff, were coming from the Never Trumper camp. And they, you know, I just think Republican establishment types don't get this. We just saw the Bushes attack, both Bushes. Attack Donald Trump. And I remember, frankly, when then Vice President Bush told Soviet Chairman Gorbachev back in 1987 that Reagan was a quote-unquote extreme conservative and all the dummies and blockheads are with him. Now, he was the vice president in the Reagan administration, but he was... good soul that he is, very much an establishment person.
But
that hasn't changed with the Bushes. I don't think that Ed Gillespie was, I think he had a hard time getting beyond that.
Yeah, but isn't it true, Jeffrey Law, that on one occasion Barbara Bush said, well, here's the patriarch, Bush 41, and my son, Bush 43, and Jeb, who's going to be a future president, and our stepson here, Ed Gillespie.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Ed is the stuff. He's a great guy, but I mean, apparently he tried to sort of thread the needle here instead of, you know, being flat out in support of the president, and I think that probably helped him. The problem here for Republican candidates, Republican establishment candidates, they can never win or they have a hard time winning because they don't get working class Democratic votes. That's what carried Pennsylvania for Donald Trump. And it didn't vote for Mitt Romney, and it didn't vote for John McCain.
Now, I understand that Steve Bannon apparently wanted to come to the rescue of Gillespie in the waning days of the campaign, but as Gillespie and his staff said no to the president campaigning with him, meaning Donald Trump, he also said no to Bannon. That might have helped, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, as a result, Ralph Northam is the governor-elect of Virginia. I mean, I just don't think this message resonates or gets through with establishment Republicans here. And this is, to borrow from my friend Laura Ingram, you know, the populism and from Reagan to Trump, this is a real serious thing here. And the Republican establishment needs to get with the program here or they are going to lose.
Now, did you happen to see up on the stage, the victory stage for Ralph Northam? The present governor of Virginia, who obviously now is soon to exit stage left, Terry McAuliffe, the former bag man for the Clintons who came out of Syracuse, New York, and became a carpetbagger in Virginia. Do you notice how he seemed to be setting the tone for his possible presidential race in 2020?
Oh, I think that that's inevitable. I mean, one of the things that happens when a political party loses a presidential election is... If they think that there is a reasonable chance, or even a less than reasonable chance, that they can win the party's presidential nomination next time out in an open field, they'll jump in. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Terry McAuliffe ran for this. And it would be a very interesting battle because he is, if nothing else, he is the version of the Democratic establishment that the Bernie Sanders folks, the Elizabeth Warren folks, just cannot abide. So that would be, you know, worth several bags of popcorn without doubt.
Now, in the Alabama race, where the president weighed in on the wrong side of the Republican primary, although Judge Moore said no problems, I understand his sympathies were with me. He was just following the dictates of McConnell, Mitch McConnell. But I noticed that it is a very close race now between Judge Moore, the Republican candidate, and the Democrat who was thought to have absolutely no chance, Doug Jones. What do you make of that? That it's so neck and neck?
Yeah, I think that Democrats think they've got a shot here, and Judge Moore, who can be controversial in some things, but I just, you know, stick to it. And you know, the thing is, Curtis, that what Republicans have to is, why are they running in the first place? What is it that they're trying to do? And Margaret Thatcher used to talk about the problem with the socialist ratchet, where the British conservatives would take over from a Labour government, and then they just more or less sit there and run things a little more efficiently. That's been the Republican Party's problem. That's what the base doesn't like. So sometimes, even if you lose an election, it is worth losing to keep the party to its principles. Otherwise, why bother? Why bother to vote? And I think that's been a problem for Republicans.
You appreciate
that? There are a lot of Republicans, believe it or not, who didn't see any difference between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, or John McCain and Barack Obama. So they didn't show up.
No, you're absolutely right. Jeffrey Lord, once again, he nails it. Although, speaking of Judge Moore running for that U.S. Senate seat in Alabama, he once again went on record as saying that the massacre at Newtown, remember, by that crazy teenager, was the result of the fact that God was angry. Now, I think Judge Moore is another one who has regular conversations with God, you know, like Ted Cruz or Michael Savage, who precedes me. I don't understand. How do I get on that pipeline? How do I get on the pipeline and talk to JC or Hashem, whoever it is that's up high in the sky there, right? Michael Savage has the pipeline, Ted Cruz, Judge Moore. Must be something maybe about me.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Rock, rock, rock the windmills. Rock, rock, rock the windmills. Rock, rock, rock the windmills. We get into rock to rock the windmills.
526. As we speak at the Crowley compound in the Irish Riviera, the Rockaways. They are stunned. Starting with Joe Crowley, the patriarch, the congressman of Queens, also the head of the corrupt Queens Democratic Party machine, most corrupt in the nation, and his cousin, Elizabeth Crowley, corrupt right down to the marrow of her bone because it's in their DNA, was a city councilwoman who had served two terms. And because of the way Bloomberg manipulated the term limits rule, she was given access to a third term. And then there was a man who's been busting his shoes through the streets in Middle Village and Woodhaven and Ridgewood and Glendale and Maspeth for years, who stood up and said, enough is enough. And remember, he made that last stand, that Custer's last stand at the Maspeth Hotel when Comrade de Blasio wanted to force those homeless people in. And it was Bob Holden and the Juniper Park Civic Association and their many allies who stood them off. And that's when Rob Holden went on that mission to rescue the city councilman's seat from Elizabeth Holzman. And last night, it's rare to see an incumbent lose, but the insurgent won. And we welcome him once again to the airwaves here on the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Hey, Curtis. Nice to be back. Celebrating here.
Now, how many votes did you actually win by when all was said and done?
Believe it or not, out of 20,000 cast, over 20,000, I won by 133. They're still counting absentee ballots, but we'll see. It looks very, very good. And I must say, the thing that put me over the top was your poster in Woodhaven with me on it that was all over Woodhaven, Jamaica Avenue. I want to thank you, Curtis, so much for that one.
Well, Robert, to be honest with you, I had made that recommendation to six of our Reform Party candidates. That's one of the lines you ran on, including the Republican line, the conservative line. And you originally ran in the Democratic primary against Crowley and lost to her. I had made that suggestion to six of our candidates, and they yesed me to death. You were the only one who followed through. And guess who was the only one to win? You!
Thanks to you.
Well, but I have to applaud you because I studied many campaigns from Buffalo to Brooklyn trying to help our candidates. And analytically, you and your followers, you knew house to house, block to block, apartment building to apartment building, what you had to do in the district to win, and you engineered it through hard work. Good old-fashioned retail politics, and you were going door to door, neighborhood to neighborhood.
Well, I did it as a kind of a civic leader. I didn't go around door to door as somebody say, vote for me. I didn't do that. I went door to door, especially in Woodhaven, and said, there's a lot of problems on your block. I said, look outside. You have this car that's been here. It's abandoned. And they said, oh, yeah, that car's been there 6 months. And I said, well, you also have all these potholes. You have a rattling manhole cover. You have weeds all over the place. And the people actually were so appreciative that somebody cared to help them. For instance, found out there was prostitution going on around 78th at a bus stop at 78th Street and Atlantic Avenue. And the cops knew about it. And the people on the block were complaining. They said, this is going on 6 months. And even some of the homeowners, their wives, were being, kind of like the Johns were coming up to them in the street and propositioning them. And it's out of control. And I said, what's going on here? And I cared. So I was going on the blocks as a civic leader, not as a politician. And I think that kind of worked.
Now, as they count the absentee ballots, that in the back of everyone's mind, Rob, because you've been at this for many years, you've seen many campaigns, that the Crowley Democratic counting machine, most corrupt in the nation, is going to try to control that process. What can you do to prevent them from stealing the election from you?
Well, I got a very, very good attorney, Marty Connor. He's very good, the top attorney. And also, we have the lead. I have a good lead. The absentee ballots are generally mirror the election, which is 50-50. And we still have an outstanding polling place that was one machine wasn't working, and I won that school more than 2-1. So it looks good. I mean, it looks very, very good. Everybody's telling me it's in. So we'll withstand the onslaught. Elizabeth Crowley ran a dirty campaign.
Yeah.
Filled with personal attacks. Mm-hmm. She stalked me and my campaign workers. Her workers sexually harassed some women volunteers in my campaign. And she even Crowley herself physically pushed a volunteer into a wall at the Forest Park Co-ops. We have a video of that, and you could see it on our Facebook page, Holden for City Council. And it got like, I think it's at this point up to 27,000 views. So, she's a piece of work. I'm telling you, Elizabeth Crowley, and she ran such a terrible negative campaign against me. So she got what she deserved
for sure. And Robert Holden, you certainly set the template when people want to know how you run for office as a first time candidate against such a strong insurgent, a strong incumbent with a huge corrupt Democratic machine behind her like Joe Crowley's. You got to follow in the footsteps of Rob Holden. And just like he taught so many communities how to block the shelters from being brought into hotel, no-tel, motel inns throughout the city, I'm sure, Robert, you would definitely give your advice to future candidates so they don't get filled with hopelessness and despair and they don't think that an incumbent can't be beat by an insurgent. Because Robert Holden proved that yesterday against the thugs of Joe Crowley's Queens County Democratic machine.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Pod 40. Did you believe Murphy, the brand new governor in New Jersey, decided to pay tribute to Springsteen, the boss? Oh, I hate him. I loathe him. I despise him. At the start of his victory presentation. And then he finished it. He back-ended it by praising Bon Jovi. Boy, this guy was just pressing all the buttons last night on the stage. He did some kind of Irish jig. I thought he was going to collapse. And he reminded me of the second coming of Goldmine Sachs's John Corsine without the beard. I mean, I saw him up there. I heard him talking. I said, didn't folks in Jersey do this once before? Steve Adubato, Emmy Award-winning anchor on PBS flagship WNET and NJTV and author of the new book, Lessons in Leadership. Didn't you make that mistake once before?
Well, first of all, Curtis, always a pleasure to be with you in Drive Time.
And you got to give, my opinion, you got to give Phil Murphy a chance to be his own governor, his own man, and demonstrate respectfully that he is not another John Corzine just because they work for the same company, Goldman Sachs. That's like saying every talk show host on WABC is the same. And Curtis, there's only one Curtis Sliwa, and let's see if there's only one Phil Murphy. Listen, his biggest problem is not John Corzine. His biggest challenge, respectfully, my friend, is going to be how the heck to pay for some of the commitments that he has made in terms of fully funding the public education in New Jersey, free county colleges, the public employee pensions being fully funded. He's got to figure out where that money is coming from. That is the challenge.
And he burnt the bridge of getting any additional funds from the federal government, from the Trump administration, when he decided to dedicate his victory speech to an attack on the president without naming him.
We will stand firm for New Jersey's values and push back against the mean winds blowing at us from Washington, D.C., whether it be attacks on public education or our environment, or attempts to demonize our immigrant neighbors or deport our dreamers, or efforts to push through a federal tax plan that would hurt our state more than any other, or mean-spirited actions to gut our health care. We will stand with steeled spines and simply say and firmly say, with all due respect to Mr. President, you will not do that in the great state of New Jersey.
Wow, he was puffing out his chest. But is that really going to help him?
Well, Curtis, I will tell you, I respect Ambassador Murphy, Governor-elect Murphy, soon to be Governor Murphy, but here's my advice. The campaign is over. You won. Governing starts now. Translation. Do you think that Chris Christie really liked and politically had anything in common with Barack Obama after Superstorm Sandy? He was kissing his butt to do what he needed to do, to get what he needed to get from President Obama for the people of New Jersey. So respectfully, when the campaign ends and governing begins, my advice to Governor-elect Murphy is to say, look, I don't like Donald Trump. I think he's a terrible president. I think his demeanor is horrible. But I'm just a guy on the radio with my friend Curtis as a commentator. When you're the governor of the state, my opinion, you have to start building relationships with people you don't like nor respect, because they have things you need for the people you need to help.
Well, in a sense, Steve Adubato, he's like Trump. He has majorities in the state legislature, both houses in Trenton.
That's right.
Democratic governor. But this looming pension problem, during the campaign, neither he nor Guadagno seemed to come up with any kind of a concrete idea of how to rein it in. I don't anticipate that anything's going to be done in that circumstance.
I disagree, Curtis. I disagree. I believe that Ambassador Murphy, soon to be the governor, is going to try to fully fund the pensions for teachers and other public employees. Now, I also believe his strategy to do that, and I asked him in a PBS interview, one-on-one with him as well as Lieutenant Governor Guadagno, but when I asked Murphy about this, he said, look, we need to raise taxes on the wealthiest, the millionaires in the state. He is going to attempt to do that. I also believe, but for the first time in many years, for the first time, that the Democratic-controlled legislature will, in fact, support that. Now, is that all the money you need for the pension? No, but it's a big chunk. My concern and what I expressed to Phil Murphy was, what if some of those millionaires leave the state, go to Florida, or at least establish residence? We no longer get their income tax revenue. That's going to have to be figured out, but he is committed to keeping that promise on pensions. He is not going to welch on that, Curtis.
All right, but he also promised that in his administration he would lower property taxes. We've heard that before. So you really think he can deliver on that too?
I am going to be hopeful, and I'm going to say it's his honeymoon. I'm also going to say that easier said than done. I'm going to say you're going to have to make some very tough decisions. I also believe you need to cap the increases in salary for police and fire. They are the greatest. Our men and women who protect us every day, our police and firemen. But I believe you absolutely have to cap those increases, because if you don't, property taxes will go through the roof again. And Phil Murphy, in my opinion, needs to tell the union, cops and firemen, love that you are with me, but we can't afford 5, 6, 10% rate.
Well, let me predict this, Steve Adubato. He may be on a honeymoon, and you may be, like, swooning right now that a Democrat is governor. But you'll soon be filing for an annulment, even if you don't have to go to the Vatican, because this guy is not going to deliver on either pension reform or lowering the property taxes.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And the Drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stage. You know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out. I guess I got no choice.
Grandmaster Flash in the Furious 5 in his classic rap rendition of The Message. And it was certainly the theme song, as we continue here in the Drive Home of 5, of what I was doing in the late 70s and early 80s in organizing the Guardian Angels. And now, 38 years later, it comes to the big screen. It made its debut, a documentary about the Guardian Angels and my life, called Vigilante. And it previewed this past weekend at the Denver Film Festival. And interesting, because that was a better audience to preview it to, since that's the heartland of America. Sure, there are people out in Denver who were from the New York, New Jersey area, but most, they've drifted there from California. And so the audiences packed the theater on three separate nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they just dug what this documentary was doing, which was getting into the period of the 70s and 80s. And Vigilante, that's the name, and the scarlet letter that I had to bear for many, many years, and still do to this day, in some countries and some cities around the world where we have Guardian Angel chapters. We're in 13 countries, 130 cities. It puts into perspective for a lot of millennials and hipsters, in both the video from that period of time and the photographs, and my voice, because the whole documentary is done in my voice. As you know, I speak a language that is quite unique and different than what others speak nor understand. Unlike Ebonics, my language is called Sliwonics, and it is a series of malaprops, spoonerisms, and fractured phrases with lots of laced-up adjectives. And so it may well have an ebb and a flow into your ear, or it may well be that you need a translator when you watch this documentary to actually understand what it is the hell that I'm saying. But it is on preview in New York, the Doc Film Festival, which starts on Sunday. And its premiere film on Sunday night is the Guardian Angel documentary about my life called Vigilante. You're welcome to attend. All you have to do is go to the WABCradio.com website. Go down to the tabs that advertise the documentary Vigilante, and it'll link you up in terms of what theater you can attend that preview in on Sunday night. And I'll be there with the producer and the director. We'll intro the piece up on the big screen, and then we'll be available for the Q&A afterwards. And then if you can't make it on Sunday night, there is a showing on Wednesday afternoon. Again, you go to the WABCradio.com website, go down to the tab about the Guardian Angel Curtis Sliwa documentary called Vigilante, and it'll tell you how to get the tickets. And again, I will make sure that I'm there to intro the piece, and then obviously to sit afterwards and do a Q&A to answer whatever and all questions that people might have. But the most interesting thing to emerge in this is you really have three different levels of what transpired in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You have first the start of the Guardian Angels themselves in response to the growing crime wave after the city was on the brink of fiscal collapse. And they pulled all the transit police off of the moving subway cars from 7 p.m. at night to 5 a.m. in the morning in the off-peak hours. Then there was the explosion of crack cocaine that hit this city and almost knocked us out to our core. That occurred in 1985, and the cops were a dollar short and a day late, didn't know how to deal with it, and we had to try to fill the void. And then naturally we cover that period of time where I was at war with John Gotti Sr., John Gotti Jr., and the Gambino crime family, which led to me being attacked with baseball bats in April of 1992, and then eventually being shot and hit five times with hollow point bullets in the back of a cab on June 19th of 1992. So I hope you liked the production. And for anyone out there who
missed that period of time of sleaze and slime in New York City, you've got to see the Guardian Angel documentary about my life and times called Vigilante. And it's previewing at the Doc Film Festival both Sunday night here in New York City and then Wednesday afternoon. And in the future, the Suits, the Mockets, the Muckety Mucks here at WABC have agreed to do a screening for you listeners and advertisers and our sponsors up in our fabulous Stage 17 complex. Stay tuned, and we'll continue to give you details about the Guardian Angel Curtis Lewa documentary called Vigilante.